Have you ever noticed that whenever you get something new, that the new wears off? You get a new car and then someone gets a nicer one. You get a new computer and someone gets an updated one. You get a new phone and then we're never content. How do you break the power of discontent in your heart? That's today.
Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Living on the Edge features the Bible teaching of Chip Ingram on this daily discipleship program. I'm Dave Drewy, and today Chip shares how breaking free from materialism will help you live a life of contentment, unheard of these days. At the end of the teaching time, Chip will join us here in studio with some important personal application for this rubber meets the road message, so be sure to stay with us for that. Well, now here's Chip with his talk from Exodus chapter 20, why we have so much and enjoy it so little.
More is never enough. It produces drivenness. If you have this size house, unconsciously, you're born in America. What's the next step? Bigger house. Whatever kind of car you have, there's an unconscious pressure. Get the next car, the bigger one, the nicer one, right? If you have this job, you want this promotion. More is never enough. If you have X amount of money, X amount of fame, X amount of this, X amount of that, more is never enough. And if you believe unconsciously that more is never enough, it produces a drivenness and a push in your lifestyle. The second lie that we believe is what I call when-then thinking. When I'm out of school, then I'll be happy. When I'm married, then I'll be happy. When my marriage gets better, then I'll be happy. When I'm stronger and sexier, then I'll be happy. When I lose 25 pounds, then I'll be happy. When I make the starting team, then I'll be happy. When I get a good job, then I'll be happy. When I make X amount of dollars and live in this part of town, then I'll be happy. When I can finally drive this kind of car, then I'll be happy. When I can finally get a place up in the woods or down by the beach along with my main house, then I'll be happy. When, then, when, then. When my spouse becomes a Christian, then I'll be happy. When I'm famous and more spiritual, then I'll be happy. It produces disillusionment. Because thinking people realize that whatever you're asking God for today, whatever you're working for, whatever you're driven to get, the moment you get it, what happens? It's a moving horizon. It has to be the next thing, the bigger thing, the better thing. And you know something? It is amazing, though. We are so shot through with when-then thinking in our culture. And you know what leads to? Disillusionment. Disillusionment. Because you think, it's almost like grasping oil. I've got it, and then it's gone. And you know what this happens to? You know, I've met two or three of us pastors. I remember when it was, if we ever get to be 100 people, then I'll be happy. If we ever get from 100 to 300 people, then I'll be happy. In this town of 4,500, if we would ever become a church of 500 people, then I'd be happy. Then someday, someway, if I could ever pastor a church of 1,000 people, and you know what? We can make it spiritual, and it's the same sick disease. And you just have all the struggles and all the pain and all the ups and all the downs. The more is never enough produces drivenness. The when-then thinking produces disillusionment. And then the final misbelief in thinking is that success is how I'm doing compared to others. The way I measure success, I compare how I'm doing compared to other people. The standard of whether I'm doing well is I look around and find out what other people are doing and I measure myself with them. And it's inbred. I can still remember probably 5-6 years old, right in the front of my yard going, my dad's bigger than your dad. My dad could beat up your dad. Why didn't I just say my dad's big? Or why didn't I say my dad's strong? But I learned, but 5 or 6 by the time, my dad's bigger than your dad. And then I learned when I went to school. And they would give me this little thing every 6 weeks that told me how I was evaluated. I never got a report card and said, oh my, I think I'm starting to fulfill my divine potential. I'm measuring myself with me. I think I'm gifted in certain areas and I'm making progress and I'm doing well compared to me and what God has given me. Is that how what you all did when you got your report card? What'd you do? You went to your sister. What'd you get? I got a B. I got an A. Well, I got a C. I got a B. And then, you know, if you had a real smart sister, you realize, don't go there. What'd you do? You found someone, you know, hey, what'd you get in math? And we compare one another, and sometimes our parents played into it unknowingly. Why can't you be smart like Bobby? Because I'm not Bobby. I never said that back to my parents, but... And then we graduate from report cards. And so People Magazine says, what? The top 10 dressed people in America are, right? And so you look at what you've got on and say, wow, I measure success by, hold it, the top 10 sexiest people in America are, and they're on the front, and you look at them and go, well, and then, well, no. Then Forbes is going to say the top 500 companies are, well, how's my business doing with the top Fortune 500? And then the Wall Street Journal is going to come out, or Money Magazine, with the top 100 richest people in the world are, and then you look at their names and look at, and you know what? How I'm doing compared to others is a dead-end street. We said, how a man or woman thinks in their heart, so you become. You are the product of your thinking. Here's what I want you to hear. When you have more is never enough thinking, it produces drivenness. When you have when-then thinking, it produces disillusionment. And when you measure success by how I'm doing compared to other people, it produces dissatisfaction, because I'll guarantee, I don't care where you get, there is someone smarter. Wherever you get, there's someone richer. However sexy you think you are, there's someone sexier. So you're always dissatisfied. And it's behind these types of thinking that produces passions and drives that the Bible calls, write the word in, coveting. Don't covet his manservant, his maidservant, his donkey, his oxen. Don't have this passionate, inner, inordinate, selfish, greedy desire to have what they have. Don't believe that you need more to be satisfied, and the way to get more is get some of theirs. Don't do that. Don't believe when I have what they have, then I'll be satisfied. Don't believe that what real success is driving a car like them and having a family like them and knows as many Bibles versus him or have a body like hers. Don't do it. That's what it says. That's the command. The 10th commandment is a command of the heart. Have you noticed that this one doesn't show up? I mean, you don't do this one with your hands. You don't do this with your feet. You don't kill anybody. You don't lie with your tongue. The 10th command is a command of the heart. The command and extend and makes clear that the law is not simply a legal code to relegate men and women's actions, but it's a divine axiom to govern the innermost being of men and women's hearts. The 10th command is a command concerning your desires and your drives and your wants and your goals. The 10th command prohibits, are you ready? It prohibits wrong thinking. And finally, the 10th command is a direct attack on envy, jealousy, and compassion. And you know, just before you feel like, oh my lands, I thought the first 9 were tough and I'm getting killed, let me tell you why. Why would God give this command? Why would your heavenly Father, why would the one who sent his Son to die for you on a cross, why would the God who cares so deeply for you make such a difficult and high command to say, don't envy, don't be jealous, don't think more is better, don't compare with others? Why? Because he wants to put a boundary around your personal contentment and your private joy. He loves you. He wants you to experience joy. He wants you to experience contentment in him with who you are, where you are, with what you have. Is this a violation of healthy, good, what I would call holy ambition? No. But this is a prohibition against coveting, desiring, being driven to get, attain, capture, manipulate something of someone else's with the private belief, then I'll be happy. And since God knows that you'll be disillusioned, since God knows that, you know, you're going to just be live a driven life, and since he knows it's going to bring pain, what's he do? Don't do it. Don't do it. How do you think you're doing on this issue of coveting? I mean, just if you scale of 1 to 10, don't tell anybody, don't raise your hand, don't put up like how many fingers. But, I mean, just sort of how do you think you're doing? I want you to put the number in your mind, because then I'm going to give you a test. And then I want you to take that number and evaluate it with sort of how the test comes out. Because this one I think is so important is this reason. If you keep the 10th command, you'll do pretty well on all the other 9. If you don't covet, if you're satisfied with who God made you doing what you're supposed to do with Him and Him alone, what you'll find is an awful lot of those other commands involve hurting, stealing, lying, manipulating, being driven so you don't take a Sabbath. It all revolves around things with the belief system that it'll deliver for you. And you know what? If you learn not to covet, you'll find that most of these other commands you'll do pretty well on. So turn the page if you already haven't. Let me give you 5 symptoms that tell us consuming passions are robbing our joy. See, that's the issue. God does not want your joy to be robbed. I mean, it was Nehemiah in the thick of it. What did he say was his strength? The blank of the Lord is my strength. What is it?
Joy.
The joy. The joy of the Lord, it's a byproduct of the Spirit. It's the Spirit of God doing something in your heart and your life, and it flows out of your emotions that give you energy and drive and excitement, and you can go against all kind of adversity. And when you do not have the joy of the Lord, you're often just driven by your passions, by goals, and with a mindset, more is better. Success means getting, achieving, having. And so let's do a little evaluation. I think there's kind of 5 symptoms that let you know where you're at with regard to this issue of coveting. Symptom number 1 is fatigue. F-A-T-I-G-U-E, fatigue. Fatigue from high-speed lives, long hours, lives of high stress, nonstop lives, get ahead, keep it up, go for it. Work, 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 push, push, push. It can be in sports, it can be in music, it can be in school, it can be I've got to do this in school and this in music and this over here and this over here and this in ministry. It can be work, it can be job, it can be I've got to be a perfect mom. I can be better than any other mom. I can have the cleanest house on the block and on top of that have a Bible study and lead a Bible study with some other women and. It's I've got to be promoted by this age. I've got to make X amount of dollars by I'm 35. By 45, I have to own outright my house. By 50, I've got to have X amount of dollars in my 401k. You name it. But it is push, 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 go, 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 go fast. And what you are most of the time is tired. Tired and beat. And the symptoms are coming home and the lazy boy looks good and the remote looks appealing. And it's just like... the old remote and a bag of chips, you know, spiritual refreshment like never before. Proverbs 23:4 says, do not wear yourself out to be rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. And I would say, don't wear yourself out to be a perfect parent. Don't wear yourself out to have a perfect body. Don't wear yourself out to have the greatest job. Now, godly ambition, goals, Spirit-directed, absolutely. Consuming desires that cause you to misprioritize and not have time with God, time with your family, time for yourself, and appropriate rest, absolutely not. Second indicator that coveting may be a bigger issue than you think is debt. And what I mean here, debt that is not relegated to long-term appreciable items is a symptom of coveting. Ecclesiastes 5:11 says, the more money you make, the more money you spend. They did a survey of high school girls. You know what the number one occupation or preoccupation of high school girls is in America? Recreational shopping. 93% of girls, this is above being with their boyfriend, 93% of teenage girls in America said, of all the things I could do, what I like to do most is go to the mall. Go to the mall and shop. Cars, clothes, toys. At least 6 or 8 years ago, for the average American family, I don't know, it's probably gone up. For the average American family, for every $1,000 that they make, they spend $1,300 to $1,500. We have nearly $20 trillion of consumer debt in America. That means that, see, no matter, you know what it tells you is that I am buying stuff I can't afford that I don't need to fulfill needs that don't get met. And I spend more than I have. Why? Because I'm not content. Why? Because more is better. And if I measure my success by you, if you get a new SUV and I don't have one, I got to have one. I never say that because Christians would never say that. It would sound too ungodly. So what we do is, you know, we talk about, you know, we really need more room. And you know, we're doing a lot of Bible studies. And because we're doing Bible studies, you know, our friends' kids are coming and we got to have the room in the back. And we go to camp like once every 2 years. And we need, because of that, and we need to add on to the house because we really want to serve people. And the reason for the pool is baptisms. We don't need a pool. It's baptism. We have a calling of God to spend $35,000 that we don't have because someday, some way, somehow, we might want to do a baptism in the back. Can I tell you something? If your priorities are in line and God gives you the money and you're giving off the top, and you're generous, and if you want a pool, buy a pool and enjoy the pool. If you don't have the money for a pool and you put in a pool, you're in debt because you're believing a bunch of lies. If you can't afford a nice car and you're driving a nice car and you're leveraged up to your nose and working obscene hours and living with unbelievable pressure, you have bought in to the coveting model. You are a prisoner. You know, how much joy is there in, should we pay Visa this month or MasterCard? And then you know, you got these people on TV. Hold on, wait, I can take all the equity out of your house, put you on another level of debt, and we can really help you get sunk deeper than you ever dreamed. Debt, recreational shopping. You do understand, and this is why, you know, what goes into your mind may be the most important decision you make every day. You do understand that I think some of the smartest, some of the most creative people in the entire world live in New York, and I'm sure there's some in Chicago, but I think of New York and LA, and you know what their goal is? Their goal is to build discontent in your heart. And they come up with, I mean, they'll pay up to $1 million or $1.5 million to get 1 minute of your time during the Super Bowl. That's how effective they think their propaganda is. And what they want you to know is, if you don't drink this beer, you're not with it. If you don't wear this shirt, you're really out of it. Unless you wear these kind of shoes, drive this kind of car, and have this kind of watch, what kind of a wimp, dumpy person are you? I mean, what's your problem? This kind of car, beautiful blondes jump into. This kind of car, hunky men who are understanding and loving, they look at you and say, I can't believe it's butter. Right? And so we have an advertising industry that every day on video, TV, billboards, checkout lines, it gives you message after message after message after message. Whatever you have, isn't it amazing? You can get a new shirt and it feels really good for about 2 weeks, and then it's an old shirt. And then you see a new shirt. And this new shirt that was really new 2 weeks ago feels like an old shirt. And who wants an old shirt? Well, who says it's new? Well, the guy who says it new says, well, they put in a little collar on it and they changed the colors for this season, and now you got a last year's shirt. You want to be walking around with a last year's shirt? I mean, if you're a woman, you don't want those pants to go all the way down to here. You want them to come up here, right? And then 2 years from now, they're going to put them down here. And if you don't, I mean, are you really going to wear those dresses that come all the way down to here like was really in 3 years ago? Well, then, well, they were, but I'm glad they changed those ones that went up to here. But, you know, and then you have the big lapels. I mean, I've got it in my closet. I kept my dad's. I got about 30, 40 ties. I buy one every 6 or 7 years, whether I need one or not. Because you know what? They're wide, then they're thin, then they're wide, then they're thin. Then, you know what? Why? So idiots like me, before I learned, would buy new stuff each and every season. Their goal is to tell you who you are doesn't measure up, what you have doesn't measure up. But if you buy what we have, if you buy this timeshare, you'll have quality family time like never before. If you buy this car, people will look at you different. Once you finally get this watch, people will know you have arrived. If you wear this suit, I mean, a tailored suit, then they'll know. And it is driving us into debt because we believe a lie. And behind it is coveting. The third symptom is worry. Ecclesiastes 5:12 says, a working man can get a good night's sleep, but a rich man has so much that he stays awake worrying. Concern, anxiety, energy that goes simply into keeping stuff up. I had a good friend, he's a radiologist in California, and then he was over a pretty large group and became, you know, very well-to-do, did very well, and his daughter majored in Spanish. And he just thought, you know, I'd like to learn that. And went to the little community college and took Spanish 1, 2, 3, 4. And then he said, you know, the only way to get it, I'm going to immerse myself in the culture. And his daughter was a Spanish major and now a missionary. And so he went to Central America for about 6 weeks. And with no one but speaking Spanish, lived in a home. And he came back and he and I were hanging out doing something. And he said, you know, everyone says this when they come back. But he said, I'm flying back on the plane and life was so simple. And he said, I came back realizing just how much stuff I have to take care of. You know, I got to write all these bills to all this stuff. There's a guy, a maintenance guy, who needs to come to do the pool. There's a maintenance guy on the two cars. I got two cars, and I did get that little sports car, and I got to keep that thing up. And then, you know, the maintenance of doing life, the worry. If your mind is consumed and anxious about taking care of all the stuff, maybe you ought to simplify it. Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe more isn't better. Maybe the when then isn't true and you've been when then, when then, when then, when then. Maybe you ought to just say now. I'm going to thank God for what I have and live a different way.
Chip will be right back. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip's message, Why We Have So Much and Enjoy It So Little, is from his series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. As Chip explained, rather than a harsh bunch of rules, the commandments are actually life-saving instructions from a father who loves his children. God's Boundaries for Abundant Living provides a high view of God that'll give you a new appreciation of your relationship with Him, creating a solid foundation for every aspect of your life. If that's something you'd like to learn more about, we want to help. For a limited time, the CDs for God's Boundaries are discounted, and the MP3s are absolutely free. You'll find God's Boundaries resources on our website, livingontheedge.org, or give us a call at 1-888-333-6003.
Thanks, Dave. I'll be right back to share some very specific application to today's message. But before I do, just a quick reminder. Today and tomorrow are the last 2 days of this series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. It's been a long series on the Ten Commandments. And just let me encourage you, if God has spoken to you, if you've kind of had this intention to get the CDs or download the MP3s, do it today or tomorrow. So, today and tomorrow, last 2 days, turn your good intentions to action.
Well, you'll find the CDs of this series on our website, livingontheedge.org. And as always, while this series is on the air, the MP3s are available there absolutely free. God's Boundaries for Abundant Living, get a copy for yourself. But also, maybe think about someone who'd really be encouraged by the teaching you've heard today, and get a copy for them too. And while you're there, check out the free online video course from Chip called How to Hear God's Voice in Scripture. It'd make a great companion study to God's Boundaries. Now with a final thought, here's Chip.
As we close out today's program, I don't know that I need to say a whole lot because we are inundated with materialism. And I have yet maybe one instance of someone coming up to me and saying, Pastor, Chip, please help me. I am struggling with materialism. The fact of the matter is this one is just everywhere. It impacts me, it impacts you, and it will take some ruthless evaluation to really admit that we have allowed stuff to crowd out a relationship with God. This is an issue of the heart. And right now, I just want you to say, now, wait a second. Would I be willing to kind of face some of this and realize I'm missing out on God's best and say, Lord, you know something? I don't want to covet. I know I am. I need help. And today, I'm going to take specific steps to becoming that fully devoted follower that you call me to be. And let you know, some of this is going to take a journey, a process. I would encourage you, get the CDs of this whole message. I mean, there's 10 CDs. Stick them in your car, and as you commute and drive, you're going to have to listen over and over and over to the 10 commands and then what Jesus says if real transformation is going to occur. And the other is, I'd go to our website, and we've got a section on small group resources, and realize which of these areas do you struggle with? You know, get a small group resource, get a group of people together at work, your neighborhood, or your church, and say, you know what? I want to become a Romans 12 Christian. These issues of my heart need to change, but it's going to be about a process of God's truth in the community with believers around His Word, loving and holding each other accountable.
Have you considered taking a next step on your faith journey by leading a small group? Fall's coming, so maybe think about your family, work, maybe with a couple of friends over coffee. If you're a little hesitant because you feel like you need some training, well, let me tell you that we're very excited about our free online video coaching for leaders. Now, to take advantage of a ton of free videos, just go to our website, livingontheedge.org. Click on Small Groups, and you'll find Coaching for Leaders. Again, go to livingontheedge.org and click Small Groups. You'll learn skills and techniques that'll boost your confidence and help you lead well. Well, tomorrow on Living on the Edge, Chip wraps up our series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. So be sure to make plans to join us then. For Chip and the entire team, this is Dave Druey saying thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.